episode 2 of The Rotating Platform. It's a podcast about video games and general nonsense. It's the 23rd of September 2014. I'm joined by Mr. Mark Green.
Hello. I got a bit of flu this week, so I might be a bit
Okay, Mark, we're with you. We'll take care of you. I'm joined also by Mr. Matthew Castle.
Hello. I don't have the flu.
You will have.
So I'm not, yeah. So I say because I'm young and full of beans.
Oh, yeah, I do feel old. I feel old and weak.
Oh.
That's why I play video games, to make me feel young.
Yes.
Like the young people.
And I'm Alan Madrill. And this week, my friends, I have been playing. It's a hot off the presses, exciting new game that I like to refer to as Euro Truck Simulator. Now, fans of the podcast,
I mentioned
it in the last podcast because it was the one I ruled out on the grounds that I can't possibly talk about this game. Yeah. So now I'm going to talk about it because it's awesome.
I want to hear about it because everyone's always talking about it online, but I've never played
it. It's such an excitement. Mm. Okay, guilty confession. I've always had a bit of a yen to play one of those sort of nerdy, and I mean nerdy in a bad way,
that's good for
like a flight simulator or a subway simulator or something like that, you know, where you're just performing a task where you're not going to face any enemies or any real conflict or anything like that. Mm. Your job is to, you know, take some means of public transport and you've got to take it to Birmingham or something like that. So this is so the kind of excitement.
There probably is conflict in those lines of work. But.
Well, how?
Well, you know, like, if you're driving, like someone in the lane next to you. Mm.
Well, that is true. I have had conflict with the people in the lanes next to me.
Or like a passenger being sick.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I don't know if they go into that. But.
Well, that's the thing. Euro Truck Simulator is the first one, and it's very simple in what it tries to do. It doesn't introduce too many random or sort of things that can go wrong with you. You know, the most sort of exciting thing that happened to me was I was taking some tomatoes to Newcastle, right? And it was quite late night.
That was it.
And I'd played it quite a bit by this point, so I kind of had the measure of the game and I knew what happened and it wasn't expecting. And then it started raining. Mm. And I had to turn my wipers on. This is the new games journalism right here. You're right in the middle of it, aren't you?
Whoa. It's like I'm there.
I'm feeling it.
Are you going to say you saw a ghost or something?
Nope. Just it started raining, and I put my wipers on, and it made it a little bit better. So I had to look at the.
Did you deliver the tomatoes?
The tomatoes are fine. Yeah, all good.
So it's all completely straight. I mean, it's literally just get in a truck, drive this thing from here.
Well, there's more to it in this. It's kind of like imagine the boring bits from Elite, right? Where you start off.
Are there any boring bits from Elite?
Yes, where you pick up a cargo of
tomatoes, space tomatoes.
When you're doing 30 tons of food and you're taking it to the next system.
You know what? There actually is a New Birmingham in not in the original Elite, but in Frontier.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I think some of the planets had a New Birmingham. Yeah.
New Birmingham?
Look it up.
Oh, my phone's got no signal, so I played the hell out of Frontier, so I'll
check it out.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah. Anyway,
so. Yeah, so boring bits of Elite in that you're taking stuff from A to Z, really, and that's about the size of it, but it starts to develop a little bit more when you start to think about like the maths involved of how much you're going to earn when you are you going to do short hops or are you going to take the longer journeys.
It's like elite trading.
Yeah, elite trading. It's more like the trading. Wow. You take on a job for a certain amount of money, but you know you're going to have to drive so far. So you think, is that worth it or not? And you can buy licenses to transport more dangerous goods. Or you can buy access to different countries so that, you know, you can kind of earn more money doing that.
What kind of dangerous goods?
Petrol, diesel, all that sort of thing. So the other parts of it that are quite like the early stages of Elite are, you remember how difficult it is to dock with a docking station in the first Elite?
Yeah.
You've got the same thing, but with parking. Like, I have maximum respect now for anybody who ever tries to reverse a lorry when it's got a trailer attached. Hmm. It makes no sense how, you know, you have to turn the wheel left in order to go right or whatever it is. But so there's a kind of spatial thing going on there. And you know you've got to do that each end. So,
you know, what happens if you, like, mess it up?
You are penalised for damaging the load. And also, if you flip the truck or completely... go wrong, like
just a reverse parking.
Oh my God. How bad does reverse parking have to be to flip that bad boy?
Well, no, if you flip it generally, right, you're unlikely to flip it when you're parking it. But if you flip it generally, you can call the emergency services.
You flipped it on purpose.
I may have done this, but what I love about this game is it's so basic. It's so sort of simple. It's not trying to be a flight sim in its accuracy or anything like that. It's quite streamlined. Mm. You can tell it's the beginning of something that's going to be more involved and more complicated later on. So, like, I mean, you know, dumb little things like, if you want to go into the text files and cheat and give yourself more money, you can do that.
Right.
And, like, simple things like that. And things like...
scummy though, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to...
Oh, no, you might. You want to point, like... Yeah. You want to, you know, you've got to put the hours in. Which I'm doing. And loving it. But it has things like, you can... There's certain types of traffic offences you can do and get away with, and certain ones you can't. Like, you can't drive on the wrong way of the motorway, I've discovered. You can't do that.
What, you physically can't do it?
Well, no, you can, but you're going to get penalised because it says wrong way offence, which is good.
That's one way of describing it.
But there's also sort of little interesting things about it. Like, where I started in the UK, you can start in different countries, whatever is your preference. So I started in the UK, where obviously you drive on the left. And in the default cabin view, you see a little bit of the wing mirror that's on your left. So you can see what's inside you, if you know, on the motorway. You can see what's on the left in the motorway.
Did that just say you can see what's inside you?
Yeah. That's a driving thing.
Is that like looking in the mirror? Is that like eyes of the window of the soul? Is that what you're talking about? You can see what's inside of you.
Is that a genuine driving expression?
Yeah, that is like, you can see it. Oh, he's coming up inside you. Yeah, that's what that means. You can say that.
Alongside. That's what people say.
No, but they do say that also. Mm. Meaning on the meaning on your left hand side.
I'm adding this to my list of things to look up.
Google that later, Mark. Yeah. See what happens.
Inside you. Okay, I'll buy it temporarily.
So you can only see on that side, which for the drivers, you really want to see what's on your right hand side, because when you're going to overtake or when you're going to come out, which means sometimes you can end up smashing into traffic because you've got no idea what's on your right hand side, because you have to scroll the mouse over to see what's on your right hand side, which means. Fascinating bit where I'm going with this is it's biased towards Europe, basically,
right?
Because that layout of the mirrors is very useful to you if you're driving on the right, which of course they do in Europe. But even though when you're in the UK, the default view is most useful to people in Europe.
Is it made in Germany?
I'm not sure. I don't know that. I'm presuming it is.
They got a bundle.
They love those simulators.
Yeah, they do. There are other simulators that come to mind that are of that type that are German made. So maybe it is. It's supposed to be. So I'm being a bit weird playing in the UK.
How much time you put into it? Is it like I've played for an hour and it's fun?
No. This is, I don't know what. I always find it really hard to say how many hours I've put into something, but maybe like 5, 6, 7 hours.
Oh, wow. I really like the sound of Elite. On wheels, you know.
But very streamlined. It is quite streamlined and quite, simple.
Do you listen to radio?
You can put your own tracks into it. You can put your own MP3s into it.
That is the best thing. I could spend hours playing any game that lets me listen to my own music, or even better, a real radio station.
I had GTA 3 on the PC, and there was a radio station in that, which was, you could put your own music in a folder on your thing. I don't know what I did, but I did something to that game where I could only listen to, when I was in a car, I could only listen to I Get Around by the Beach Boys, endlessly on a loop, whatever, like, you didn't have the, like, I... deleted the other radio stations or something, so it was every car I got in. So I thought that'd be really cool to like drive off from a crime with that playing. After 10 hours, you're like, oh Jesus, don't turn on the radio.
Easy for the cops to track you down.
Well, you say that, but he does get around.
round.
That's great. That has made me want to pick.
Yeah, it's worth a play if you have that desperate, sad urge like I do.
And what have you been playing, Greener?
Well, I've been in Indie World again, and I've been playing a game called Rogue Light. Have you heard of Rogue Light? I'm bringing the obscure L-I-T-E. Indie game.
Is it a roguelike?
It's like roguelike, yeah. It is a pun on roguelike, but it is roguelite, L-I-G-H-T. So it is a roguelike that uses light as a kind of... Not as a mechanic. Well, it kind of is a mechanic.
Don't they all use an element of darkness in the sense that, like, the fog of war type thing?
Well, you're uncovering things. That's true. You're looking at a guy who didn't really, or listening to a guy who didn't really play, really understand what a rogue like a game was, or really play one properly, for years and years and years and years. So there was a game on the Spectrum called Hall of the Things, I think it was called.
Hall of the Things?
Hall of the
Things. That's a terrible name.
I thought that was a great name for a game when I was
Hall
like
of 11. The Thing?
Hall of the
That's
Things.
That's some thing.
Hall of the Things.
Things.
Hall of the
Things. Even stuff that's like something you just gave up, it's like, Cave of Stuff.
Like, no, but it's a pun. It's a pun. It, like, All of the Things. Hall of the Things.
No, yeah? I don't think All of the
Things. It's multi-layered.
All of the Things wasn't an expression back then, was it?
All of the Things? I don't know. Actually, no, it wasn't.
Is that an expression now?
Yeah, like, clean all the things.
Clean all the things. That's a meme, right? On the internet. But see, it was years ahead of its time.
It's news to me.
So get back to the... So Hall of the Things was a little... Yeah. A kind of like very primitive Spectrum top-down game, which I didn't appreciate at the time. It was obviously based on Rogue. It was years and years and years later. So... yes, you're probably right that, Rogue games do, you know, hide what's coming up.
Yeah.
But, so Roguelite, is 2D. So if you think a little bit like Spelunky, essentially, but it's got that kind of, I was thinking about it as kind of retro indie, because a few years ago when all indie games seemed to be kind of 2D pixely platformers with crunchy sound effects and stuff, it's kind of from that sort of aesthetic. I've played it just in a little window. It's all green and blue. It's got a very nice look to it. But the caves are all pretty much in darkness. There's the odd kind of like torch or firefly around. The thing is, you start with like four arrows. That's your only weapon. So this is really, really simple. And the arrows are flaming arrows. So when you fire an arrow, it sticks in a wall, and that's a little bit of light that's kind of permanent.
Mm-hmm.
You can also light up these kind of swinging lamps, and everything like it just, it's really simple, but it just looks really nice because there's little vines hanging everywhere, and there's these lamps that are on a kind of chain.
Mm-hmm.
And so every time you fire an arrow, they all swing and everything. It looks really cool. So you can gradually light stuff up, but you're constantly trying to refill your arrows, and you've obviously enemies to shoot as well. And like a normal roguelike, you're just getting deeper and deeper and deeper. I've only got down to a certain level where there's this boss dude that you have to kill by shooting really big lamps. There's four really big lamps that are scattered around his little lair. It's just really, really cool.
Is it procedurally generated?
Yeah, partially. I mean, you can kind of see it is, but you can kind of see the chunks of... I'm starting to recognise the chunks of dungeon
right.
that's kind of piecing together, you know, sort of jigsaw
That's
puzzle.
The problem I have with procedurally generated stuff, is it always has that kind of, it's this long winding bit of corridor again, you know.
I'm definitely starting to, I'll see a little say, dip with some spikes and a lamp hanging. I know now if I go left and up, then that's going to be normally the way forward. You know? And I'm like, I don't normally like games, well... I have a bit of a problematic relationship with games, with darkness in games. Like, Matthew just gave me like a whoop kind of look. Well, so there's loads of really good game moments about dark. So thinking of Doom, right? That, whatever it was, the second area in Doom where you go in that flickery corridor. I'll never forget the kind of scariness and kind of just, oh my God, this is the futureness of that. But I don't get on with, say, day-night cycles in games. I just find them infuriating because at night you can't see what you're doing, right? So for half of GTA, you can see everything.
When you're saying like half of GTA, you're just stumbling around the streets going, where am I? Help! It's just nighttime like in real life. What happens to you at real night?
Well, you can't see stuff as
well. You just sit. Well, because you can't move.
Yeah,
you put on the headlights. When you're driving your truck, you put
on
the
headlights. Yeah, but
you
can't... That focuses on this very small area.
It's not actually dark. It's still light. You can see everything.
Yeah.
No, it's still harder to see stuff, though. It is definitely harder to see stuff.
That's night!
At night. Yes, exactly. And I'm
like... That's, like, the point. You know, it's reducing your field of vision for dramatic effect,
it's reducing the gameplay experience to be closer to real life for no particular reason.
Oh, no, hang on.
It's like you can't deal with dark... With nighttime, like you're just falling over fences and stuff because you don't know what you're doing.
Just hours of game time.
Nighttime is always kind of... I see where you're going, though, and it's always kind of a pain. Like when you play Minecraft and it becomes night, you've got to watch out for yourself, right? But that's...
And
without the night, there'd be no day.
Yeah, and Minecraft, it's part of you know, it's part of the gameplay experience. But in GTA, it's just like, well, I guess the real world has night time, so we'll put night time in, but it doesn't do anything.
Oh, Jesus, you're so anti-night. You're so pro-sun. It's terrible.
I've got a thing where I hate where you have to do a thing at a particular time. Like in Fallout, you know, a certain character is going to be there during the day and another character is be in that location in the night because of realism, right? Because people don't just stand behind a desk 24 hours a day. Mm. But it annoys me when I have to like use the wait function in Fallout, you know, just sit and wait for 6 hours. Yeah, I'm just going to stand here for 6 hours and wait.
just do that in real life. Just stand outside the post office. Everyone's like, oh, that guy's been there for 13 hours.
It's weird, it's in Fallout when you're in someone's house. So you just have to kind of like move around to you while you're just like...
No, just ignore him.
Anyway, I was going to... Yes, yeah, so... basically, but despite all the night talk, I like the darkness and night stuff in Roguelite. That was my point that I was going to.
Oh, gotcha.
So I get on with it.
You learn to love the night.
I have. And yeah, it's just really a neat little game. You get you collect coins from enemies and lamps and stuff, and there's a little screen full of power ups you can buy from between each after each time you die, and you get more arrows and get a little light that follows you around in the end. So really sweet little game. I forget the name of the author. I'll put it on the website, but he's done some other really good little indie games as well. So. Playing it for ages and it's it seems fairly complete. So.
And the coolest thing about it is sort of the light mechanic and how that is used.
I think the coolest thing about it is it's just very, it's like a cute little Game Boy game, you know, it's just, you know, made by a really good developer. Mm. It's just like, just perfectly, the sounds and the look of it, it's just a real pleasure to, you know, I just kept firing up again and again, even though there's not much to do, you walk, you fall, you fire an arrow, you collect some coins, but I just found myself just keep firing it up because I just wanted to kind of experience it, you know?
That golden nugget in games, isn't it? Is feel. Mm, you know, it's just a nice world that you want to be part of.
That's right. So, Roguelite, I recommend it. So, what have you been playing, Matthew?
Well, I have sort of been playing Destiny.
Oh, good.
No, but I say sort of because I'm actually in the midst of moving house. As you can see, we're in my bare room.
Yeah.
And because of this, my TV and games consoles are now packed up and in my new place. So I've had to stop playing Destiny, which pains me because I was really enjoying it.
Good.
I have played it to about, I think I was level 13 of 20 levels. Yeah. But the big thing with Destiny, I don't know if you were following...
What is this game, Destiny, of which you speak?
Okay, well, it's you know, it's massive.
Yeah.
But the big sort of thing with it is kind of a little bit MMO-y. Mm-hmm. And because of that, it makes it quite hard to review because it's this sort of, you know, the end of the game isn't the end of the game. Sure. It's already kind of evolving and changing and they're releasing new modes.
One of the things that's been said is it doesn't really start until level 20.
That's exactly it. Which everyone said that, but everyone discovered that just as I packed up my TV and thing. So I have no idea. Like,
no!
I don't want to spoil it for myself, but what? So you get to level 20 and then stuff
starts? Nothing changed. No, so... When you're playing, you think, my reason for doing things in this world is to get XP to level up and unlock all my skills.
Yeah.
But then there are other layers of points. And there are, like, items that you have to level up. And there are, to tell you the truth, I'm not entirely sure why the game begins at 20, because I haven't got to 20 yet. But there are actually, it turns out, really, the leveling, I think, is kind of more of a very long tutorial to get used to your character's skills. And then all of a sudden there's this whole other layer of sort of statistical tweaking going on, which is actually what it's really about. And you've got these very high level sort of raid missions, which take people sort of like 6 hours to do. And it all sounds absolutely brilliant. And everyone at work is talking about it. Oh. And
I played the beta. Just over that weekend where they let anybody in. And I really enjoyed it. It took me a little while, but I only got it to level, I don't know, whatever the level cap was. Seven or eight or something. I was left with this feeling of, I want to get back into that world and play more of...
That is very interesting, because some of the things that have been said, I've not played it, because I'm not a massive online player.
Yeah.
It's just some, but one of the things that's been said about it is kind of slightly repetitive, or you kind of think, I'm just doing the MMORPG thing, but it's the first person?
Yeah, it is. The thing I'd say kind of that, you know, against that is that the thing that you're repeating is Bungie's incredible kind of pockets of action, you know, sort of did in Halo.
The 30 seconds of fun, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, they do enemy AI, they do gun feel, they do all of it in such a way that when it combines, it's endlessly satisfying. Like, it's something I'm happy to do over and over and over again. Plus, you're doing it often with your friends, and so that's fun. You know, there's that sort of, all games are good in co-op, but this is, you know, really, really made for it. But yeah, I think that's why people are now getting so excited, because it turns out there is all this cool stuff kind of beyond the story. You know, they're introducing these sort of time exclusive, time sensitive missions, you know, that they'll like run for a week. So you have like a week to do it. Yeah. And that's what I'm missing out on. So it's like, ah.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I remember a game completely unlike Destiny, I always get these in the wrong order, but the most recent Rayman game. Was that Origins?
Legends.
Yeah.
Origins was before.
Yeah, Origins. Origins.
Origins.
Yeah, Rayman Origins. Just because I got the flu, it's constantly vitamin C on my mind. I'm not necessarily someone these days who buys a game on day one, but this is clever stuff, because Rayman had those daily challenges
and
it's just like, you just feel like you're missing out if you don't, you know, before if you bought a game 4 or 5 minutes down the line, you were like, you're not missing out on anything as such.
Yeah.
Except if it was something like Dark Souls or whatever, where it's best played communally. But now this kind of thing, when I heard they were releasing these extra bits and bobs, I was like, oh, I wish I bought this on day one though, and then I could be experiencing this.
It's a particular thing. It's like GTA 5, you can play that online now, and if you buy it now, you're going to get as good, you're going to get a better experience than people got at launch, obviously, because the thing was broken at launch. But Destiny, if you pick it up in 6 months' time, I'm somebody who tends to pick things up later down the line, if I'm going to, but Destiny, I kind of think, if you're not in at the start, what's the point?
There is that, and I think, but a big part of its appeal is that they have this huge, you know, programme of content and support planned, and that's why it's the most expensive video game ever made. It's not like it's the disc is just the beginning.
I don't know.
I've got faith, and I think you'll be able to find people to play it. You know, I think it's already established itself as a big enough thing that it's going to have that kind of momentum. Yeah. It's not like games where the lobbies are just empty forever.
But they're trying to do World of Warcraft on it,
kind of. But they're trying to do it. They're trying to make it incredibly console friendly. They're basically trying to break the MMO into the console space in a way that like no one's achieved yet. And they're doing it by streamlining it, which is what I think got people's kind of backs up a bit, you know, to begin with. They're like, what is this game? It's so simple. And you're like, that's because it's aimed at people who wouldn't normally touch this kind of stuff. And they are buying it in their droves. So it's working. It's like COD, you know, the MMO for the COD generation.
Oh, same. Cool. Any more Destiny chat?
No, I've said my piece.
You feel
I haven't got it, so it'd feel wrong of me to talk endlessly about it, because it's currently in a box in Bath.
We should come back and revisit it.
I hope no one breaks into my flat and steals it while I'm not there.
Right, well, this may be on the
internet. What's your address?
When are you going back?
Huh?
When are you going back?
Friday.
Right, so don't put this up before Friday.
I haven't said my address.
Oh, that's
true. Someone goes on a rampage in Bath because they hear me on this podcast. They're like, there is a copy of Destiny in one flat in Bath.
Unprotected.
Worst robber ever. Or the most brilliant, I don't know.
That's great, Matthew. Thanks for the Destiny chat. And now, this.
Okay, so we jumped onto a new platform, I think. Is that how it works?
The platform's rotated.
The platform has rotated into a new section, and we are on it.
So what I'm imagining is a platform with walls vertically slicing it into different areas with doors in. So you kind of, it's almost like one big room, and you rotate between the rooms.
Oh, you rotate.
Is that what
you
that?
See, I see it as a 2D platform that as it's flipping, we all jump and we're on the underside of it now.
Whoa. So we're upside down?
No, no, we're on top of what was the underside because it's rotated and we've kept up with it.
Oh, I see. So it's sort of turning around like a... Yeah, yeah.
Right, okay. So we're on the feature now that's on the underside of the previous feature.
Yeah. What is it?
So this feature is called Predicto Name. Is that what we're calling it? Very terrible.
It was so popular last week.
Yes, we had so many letters. Is that what, I think that's what people write now. Letters.
Text. Using just predictive names.
Yes. So
very hard to understand.
We better explain what this is. So we got the idea off Twitter. And you basically use the predictive powers of your mobile phone. You rattle out some random letters and you see what words come up, and that is the name of a game. And then maybe we will talk about what that game may entail. And quite often we think we just want to go off and make that game and never do a podcast ever again. So we're going to do it live this time. We came pre-prepared for episode one. So we'll see what we come up with.
This is going to be raw.
I've got a few pre-baked, which I've put a lot of thought into. And care and love.
Okay, well, let's start with your pre-baked ones then.
One of your deep ones.
Let's go.
Going deep. All right, and Cleopatra Chirico.
What? It doesn't even make sense.
No, it's Cleopatra Chirico. It's a free-to-play shopping sim, and it's marketed at young girls, and it's on iOS. There you go.
In your head,
I looked it up.
It's not actually real.
Sound real. It sounds like you've just taken a game off the
iOS. The magic of the store. Predictor.
What is a Cherico?
I don't know that.
I genuinely don't know.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it had some shopping involvement.
That's a disappointing
thing. There you go. So it's free play shopping sim. It's all like you have to buy the thing or wait 20 hours until you get more money to buy the other thing. Well, you know, the old Egyptian queen, I don't know.
She runs it.
You've spent more time thinking about the
mechanics of running a shop.
Yeah, the actual, how it's going to work from a monetary perspective, how you actually play.
Oh, you mean like the designers of free-to-play games on mobile platforms? Zing!
This feature has got very political all of a sudden.
Satire right there, my friend.
See if we bring it back to
thanks, Alan.
Non-political.
Yeah.
I'm going to create a game name on the fly.
Alan, Matthew, sorry, is typing.
Okay,
swiping.
Here we go live.
I got Utrecht Health Pushcart.
Utrecht? Oh, it's like the place?
The place, Health Pushcart.
Pushcart, that's brilliant.
See, I see that.
Oh, I like it.
That's kind of like a do-it-yourself ambulance.
Yeah.
Like it's like a health push. It's just a trolley
of medicines. It's a gurney.
That you push around in Utrecht.
Yeah, so you've got to simulate. It's a gurney simulator.
Yeah.
Winner.
Yes.
Okay, next.
Are you going to create one?
Well, I don't have predictive...
Got a phone, Mark.
I've got a very old phone at the moment. Actually, let me have a go.
Alan, give us another one of yours while Green is firing up his phone.
Yeah, I'm slowly dying. All right, I've got a game called Nikolaev Mudflow.
What's the cash model for this game?
You know how each game has like a little tagline? This is... Or like, you know, a very few words which describe what it is. What I've got written here is Russian-themed mudsliding game.
Oh, you've really put some thought into that.
Yeah,
I've gone deep, he says.
I've gone deep. So it's an indie game. With a name like that, it's only going to be an indie game, right? And it's kind of blocky, stylized, sort of ironic, retro visuals. Mm. So like, it's got... it put me in mind of Papers, Please. It's got that kind of visual style going on. But...
This is too much, Alan.
I love this. This is my favourite thing. But... Well, it's not got the kind of simplistic, you know, it's got physics about it, and the physics that I wanted to put into Nikolaev Mudflow were basically the physics from Horace Goes Skiing on the Spectrum.
Oh, right.
Yeah?
I don't think that had physics as such.
Well, but it had a good feel about it. I'm not talking about the bit where you get smashed into by an ambulance when you're trying to get to the when you're trying to get to the slopes, but when you get there, it's got a lovely feel of how you kind of go down the slopes and go back, go left and right.
That is a very specific pitch.
And you slide down.
It makes sense that would be the launch title for the Spectrum in Russia.
Nikolaev Mudflow.
That's brilliant.
Go on, Green. Go speed of your...
All right, hang on. I've got to get... That's not a real word. Oh, God. Blind Abelp. Blind Abelp.
Who's Blind Abelp?
Okay, this is better. This phone doesn't seem to know many words. How about Alien Dad?
Is that the best word you can come up with? All that for Alien Dad?
That's quite cool, isn't it?
That sounds more like an 80s so comedy film.
So it's a knockoff of Octodad. Thanks.
Yeah, this is the first thing that popped into my head.
Alien Dad.
Alien Dad, right, who's next?
Do you want to hear about my lovely, lovely third game?
Yeah, all right.
Oh, such enthusiasm. Neckerchief Sing.
Yes.
S-I-N-G-H.
S-I-N-G-H. Yeah. And now this is a movie tie-in. So it's a movie tie-in from the movie of the same name, where Neckerchief Sing is it's a comedy, a situational comedy. I like to call them sitcoms, where about a Sikh gentleman who ends up, for complicated plot reasons, living in the deep south of America. Oh, and it's his kind of culture clash with those people, how he relates to them. So it's Neckerchief Sing, and it's just a really ropey tie-in.
All right, next.
I just got Turbo Bishop. Which, I don't know if that's a racing game.
No, I think it's a speedrunner. You know, speedrunner. Yeah, just a bishop running very fast.
Or is it someone's attempt to make chess more exciting?
Turbo Bishop. But that's the thing, it's like chess apart from Turbo Bishop, who's just like the wild card.
Just spinning all over the shop.
Yes,
just knocking pieces over. Yeah, that's awesome. That's
kings, queens, all bow to Turbo Bishop.
Turbo Bishop. Yeah, he's a bishop, but more so.
Is that it? I still think Alien Dad didn't get as much love as it should have done. That was pretty good.
I've got Trudge Grub.
Trudge Grub? Oh, you double B. On the grub.
What does trudge mean? Oh, like trudging.
Trudge grub.
Trudge grub. But that could be a man's name. Trudge grub.
They're all names. Oh. Everything we're coming up with, we're coming up with bad names.
They're all names. My phone now exclusively does names. It's weird.
Well, trudge grub, isn't it?
Yeah.
It could be Lord of the Rings, goblin or something. That'd be a goblin name.
Mm-hmm. I think like more of a great big, muscly, kind of...
Oh, yeah, Trudge Grub.
Yeah.
Like a troll, ass, yeah.
Trudge Grub.
I think all of these characters could be, that we've come up with so far, they could all be, like, bosses in a Kojima or Suda 51 game, like Trudge Grub, Blake Snakeskin Blake, Turbo Bishop. They all sound like, if you met them in a game, it would say, like a Kojima Metal Gear where the name comes up, like Turbo Bishop.
Yeah. Alien Dad, actually.
Alien Dad has got no place in any world.
That sounds exactly like something Kojima would come up with.
Kojima would not come up with something as crap as Alien Dad. That's when Kojima really has lost it. Everyone's like, oh man, remember all these great characters, the laughing octopus guy, Revolver Ocelot, Alien Dad. wait a second, what was that? What was that last one?
Oh, poor Alien Dad.
I mean, that's coming down from Revolver Ocelot as a name, which is pretty special.
That's a great name.
I think they're
Alien Dad.
That's how Snake would say it. Do you think that's how he did it? Yeah, predictive text was a thing then, right? Maybe that's how he did it.
That's how he comes up with everything.
All his names.
Do.
Okay, well, that's probably the end of Predicto Name.
Yeah, I think we've truly exhausted that.
Yeah, some good stuff there.
So it's the end of that regular feature.
Okay, so that's enough Predicto Name fun for one week, I reckon.
It was fun.
It was fun. Fun all the way through, from start to finish. And now this.
Now it's time for a musical interlude from the Rotating Platform Players, who are going to perform a unique version of a popular song using only Jam with the Band on Nintendo DS, a collaborative rhythm game.
Thank you. Platform has finished its rotation and it has deposited us in the section of the podcast where we talk about what we've been reading or watching or indeed not playing, but there's still video game related.
And I think we agreed some time ago, probably before we even started the podcast, that we could have things that have a very, very tenuous link to video games, right? Because that's what.
So I'm guessing that this week you've got something which is really, as Alan would say, it's really gone deep in video games this week.
I stay right in the shallows. But yeah, Matthew, sorry, do you want to start with?
So I've been reading developer blogs for Bayonetta 2, which we talked a little bit about. No, we didn't. No, I tell a lie.
We talked a bit on...
In the trial podcast.
Episode zero.
Which is the legendary episode zero. Was it they say if you listen to it, you die 5 days later. So I've been reading these developer blogs from Platinum by Bayonetta 2. And they are super fascinating things because what they've basically done is they've tapped into all the different departments and kind of invited lots of different people. So it's not just the director. Mm. It's the kind of guy who... does like the sort of user interface, the guy who does the attack effects. So it's things you don't think about, and the level of incredible depth they go into in their thought processes. So there was one where the guy basically, I can't remember his exact job title, but he does sort of anything which is a special effect, which is kind of a particle effect attached to an attack. So it's things that kind of, you know, like the swishing lines that come out of a fist when you're punching it, or the kind of what happens when you hit an enemy, like how much smoke comes out of them or whatever, and how he was talking about the sort of science of how these tiny effects can make you feel, you know, really powerful, or they can completely deflate the sense of moves. And then he had these little kind of prototype videos showing kind of the game sort of before and after he's kind of done his magic, or comparing Bayonetta 1 reaction effects to Bayonetta 2 reaction effects. And it's just crazy. Like, you don't even notice it when you're playing it. You know, you get the sense of, like, power. But to see someone go, oh, it's because of this thing that I've done, I think is, like, incredibly fascinating.
Do you think it's going to sort of change the experience when you come to play it, that you'll be super aware of these things? Because obviously, you know, as a games writer, you have to keep your eye out on these things.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, there is a bit of that. And I've found in the past that, like, in general, when you've gone to, like, a preview event for a game, when someone really keeps banging on about something, you do tend to notice it more. Like, they try and shape the kind of how you approach a game in that way. But this is, the things they're talking about are quite subtle. You know, the guy is sort of saying, some of them I hadn't noticed having played the game.
Yeah,
when they were talking about it, I was like, is that real? So the guy who's doing the user interface, he was talking about showing how to sort of combine, show different sort of status effects were in play based on the kind of tinge of colour around her health bar. So I didn't notice that. Sorry, Mr. Health Bar. But it's...
hope he's not listening.
Some of it's really interesting. I also really liked, because, like, small spoiler alert, Bayonetta 2's story is kind of probably best described as some kind of garbage. Because it's... like, I love Platinum games, but I think their story stuff is very baggy and mad.
It's not narrative-driven, it's action and...
Yeah, exactly, but they still have tons of cutscenes.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, that makes it sound more negative than it is. I mean, you know, judging a Platinum game on its story is kind completely wrong. But anyway, so that got a bit negative. The blogs are a very positive thing. They've got a lot of love in there, and they're super talented. And it's just nice to hear from... I always think it, because, you know, Japanese studios can be a bit sort of mysterious sometimes. So to kind of go hear them in their own words talking about their mad jobs, I think is sort of neat.
So the mad jobs, is it you can be, you know, Mr. Person or Mrs. Person in charge of reaction effects, or in charge of something incredibly specific, and you work on just that.
They're fundamentally like visual designers or programmers or whatever. They've just been put in place to do things. Yeah. You know, so like in, because it was always interesting about the Iwata asks Nintendo interviews. Mm. You know, you'd have the guy who, like, I worked on Ocarina of Time for whatever, 4 years, but I only programmed bosses. You know, that is the thing I do. Yeah, and I quite like that idea of kind of mastering a little piece of a game and not being like your baby. And
definitely. That's Alan, good. Yeah, Alan.
What have you been reading slash watching slash listening?
I have been... I saw an interview, sort of on IGN. It was an interview with Guillermo del Toro, and he's talking about Hideo Kojima. And their experience of working together. It's taken up at Tokyo Game Show, this interview. And it's really, really nice to see an interview with a filmmaker just talking with admiration and respect for a game maker.
For Hideo Kojima.
Well, not for Hideo Kojima. Well, you know, who else? He's, you know, he's extremely worthy of that. You know,
okay, let's not talk about that. But yes.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you can. It's easy to level accusations, but his achievements are amazing.
Yeah, he has achieved enormous.
You know, Mark allows that. Hideo Kojima, not a chance,
sir. Because he gets a place on the Space Hulk.
Oh, yeah, he could have his little, a special chair.
So, yeah, he talks about him and he talks about when they met just several years ago and when they started talking about the art of storytelling in the fantasy genre, which is obviously a big thing that Guillermo del Toro has done his whole career. But then when you see del Toro talking about Kojima, they're sort of, you start to see contact points between what they do. Mm. And they started to understand that they were actually doing more similar things than they thought. Mm. And del Toro, like, gained more and more respect for Kojima when he was playing more of his games and kind of understood that this was a master storyteller. But what del Toro says is he admires the way that Kojima thinks outside the box, and he's not just in his creative choices, outside the cardboard box, nice. But
your eyes lighting up as the connections are made.
Oh yeah, but like you think, like technically makes less obvious technical choices. Like he was saying with PT, they chose to present it in he's quite vague about the technique, but I'm guessing the engine or whatever it is not bleeding edge stuff, so that it would look more like an indie game. So that it would have more of a feel like something that isn't from a massive studio. So you don't know what it is at first. You know, they're kind of contributing to that
The
sense of mystery.
Why
and like
what is it?
It's pretty stonky looking though.
Yeah,
that obviously looks great, but you know, it's technically not right at the kind of bleeding edge in the way that you'd expect.
Well, it's also just a corridor, which is quite weird.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's so much weird stuff in that thing. But it's just the corridor.
That's very handy.
And then again, exactly.
It's all set in a corridor, and it's about my parents' divorce. that's like 90% of indie games.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Gone Home has a lot to answer for. So I just thought it was amazing to see a filmmaker talk about a game maker, and you know, with less the like talk about it like it's a mature art form, which it is, and we all know this, but the rest of the world doesn't seem to have cottoned on yet that this is a mature art form with people who have developed their skills and said to be masters of it.
I remember I was reading the Guardian's article interviewing Sigourney Weaver for Alien Isolation, and it's interesting how often people who don't know much about video games talk about them as having so much potential. So I remember Sigourney Weaver just going, I think there's huge creative possibilities in the video game space. It's like, they're being explored all the time.
Welcome to 20 years ago, Sigourney.
I love Sigourney Weaver.
Who doesn't? But
You wonder, like, in their heads, that they're, you know, she's thinking that video games are Pac-Man or Alien Isolation. Like, there's nothing in the middle. It's this void.
It's a quantum leap forward.
And, suddenly, you know, and from that perspective, you think, wow, that there is something here, but it's the early days, you know, it's like the early days of cinema type of thing.
Yeah, right.
But del Toro also talks about when they first started to work together in Tokyo, and they started putting together some ideas for what it didn't even have its name, what the original teaser was going to be like, and they went away and built something. But you get this great sense from them that they're both trying something really different for them, and they're both, I kind of imagine them huddled together giggling like schoolgirls, thinking, and now we'll do that, and then we'll do that, and nobody will see this coming.
That's cool.
You know, and plotting like that. It's a really interesting video.
Cool. Well, that was quite a wide-ranging things we have read, but the ground's starting to move. I'm feeling what's happening? The platform's rotating. I think that's what it normally does. We're going to be dumped into the next round. So, we'll do that after this. News this week. is that next-gen GTA might have a first-person mode.
Sure.
A walking and driving first-person mode, which I think is genuinely, no sarcasm, genuinely brilliant, because I think actually first person really helps immerse me in open world games. Yeah, I hope it's real.
Oh, that's a world I want to get up close and personal with.
Yeah, absolutely.
In first person.
Yeah. So I'm all over that. And it got us thinking, well, what other things should GTA have? A very broad
what
idea.
What does GTA really need?
Yeah, so we've been thinking a little bit about this. Alan, should we go through some of our ideas?
Yeah. We've got
so
a raft.
Listen up, Rockstar.
Yeah. Here they come.
This is how to make
GTA 6 forming right in front of your eyes.
So since GTA 5 came out, we've had Watch Dogs, and Watch Dogs had those kind of satirical mini games that you would play when you take a digital trip.
Yeah. Right.
And you'd go and become a giant spider, or you know, crawling up the side of a building or something like that. So, because we're going first person on this, and because of developments in technology that have happened in the last sort of year or so, character Michael in GTA 5 is going to get an Oculus Rift or some sort of VR type helmet, and he's going to go into the digital world. Because you know how in GTA they like to do spoof video games, and on the commercials they talk about video games.
Yeah.
So this, you could actually go in and play a game within a game, and using the Rockstar's usual sort of trademark delicate hand with satire. It'll be just a disgusting send-up of video games and everything that is supposed to be wrong with them. So,
cool.
A kind of whole...
Greenery, is your first point going to be as well thought out as that?
It's much shorter. These are much shorter than... I didn't put as much thinking time in as you did.
No, that's all right. We'll go with it.
So, Saints Row had the dubstep gun.
Yeah.
So, I think GTA should have the Jai-Ho gun. When you fire it, all the pedestrians do the choreographed dance move from the end of Slumdog Millionaire.
That is brilliant.
Next.
Okay. Hair physics. You know, next-gen Tomb Raider had, oh my God, look at Lara's hair. There you go. Just get hair. But none of the characters have much hair.
They're all bald.
Yeah, they're all bald. But the only one who's really got... Well, I thought we could... Franklin's hair, tightly cropped to his head. But yeah, look at the physics.
Okay, I've got, you can steal wheels off cars and put them on other cars.
Oh, God. Why would you do that? Think big.
I was just thinking about stuff you
can't see. It's the power of next gen.
Okay.
So you could have, like, what, the wheel of a tractor on a sort of normal car?
I don't know, I just thought it's... I started thinking about stealing wheels.
It'd be good if you could break into, like, a police station, steal the wheels, and then commit a crime, and they all drive off you with no wheels, just sort of grinding along the floor.
Yeah. You could shoot wheels
out.
That's
a good idea.
So that would be hilarious.
The logical extension.
Take ages to set up, it'd be worth it.
Okay, we could, you know, chop the dog. The dog,
yes.
Franklin's dog.
Indeed.
So we're thinking first person, right? You want to be first person as the dog, yeah? Because playing as a dog works a treat for Call of Duty, so why not for GTA 5? There are, of course, sections in GTA 5 where you do play as Chop, but for me, they were totally underused.
For me, I just couldn't connect with Chop. I didn't ever feel I was Chop.
You didn't feel empathy.
I want to be in Chop.
Well, yeah, now you can. Next gen.
Okay, I've got that there would be monsters hiding in the grass. There's 150 to collect. You can trade and battle with your friends.
That's good, man. Yeah. That'll sell.
Next. I don't think any of my ideas are very good.
I don't know how you're going to top just stealing wheels. Oh, my God.
Wheels.
Which is your next one?
Okay, and that's a game with a whole functional digital mountain in it. You know, it's already thinking pretty big.
What about this, though? Your teeth occasionally fall out. Leave them under the pillow in your hangout, and the tooth fairy leaves ammo or body armour.
Body armour?
Yeah.
So your teeth are just going to fall out in the game for no reason. This is giving me night. I'm going to dream about this. So your teeth fall out, you have to pick them up. What button is it to pick them up?
Oh, I didn't think it through.
And then you've got, you haven't put the thought in.
Just thinking of more realism.
So they're in your pocket, they're in your inventory, six teeth, yeah. And then you put it under your pillow at night.
If you have the button to press to make your teeth fall out, like an inopportune moment, just a free character type cutscenes. So like when you're talking to your boring therapist, you can just be like, rip, and all your teeth fall out. He's like, oh my god.
You're going to have to recut all the audio, so the character will
gum mode.
Well, yeah, we'll start. It was quite a simple idea. I don't think it was overcomplicated, but yeah. Teeth.
I'm sure they thought of this and were like, oh, yeah. Can we implement
it's on
it?
The wish list.
Is it worth it?
You got any more, Alan?
Not a sausage.
I've got, if you leave the controls alone for too long, Michael taps his feet and looks at you crossly.
Does he not already do that? Oh my god.
Courtesy of every game ever.
I got ice cream shops.
Ice cream shops.
That's pretty much all my ideas.
Oh my god. Rockstar. Oh, is that on the phone? Oh yeah, it's Rockstar. What's that? You want Greenish to come and work, design GTA 6 because you really love this thing about Michael tapping his foot and looking at the screen like he was cross.
Maybe making a sarcastic comment.
Great. Yeah, I don't have anything to do today.
they were all a bit random, those ideas.
Yeah, it was good though.
So we've solved GTA.
That's great.
Done.
Cool.
And now this.
The platform has finished its rotation and it has left us in the year 3000.
Wow.
Yes, that's I'm setting wow. the scene.
That's exciting.
Is it a wonderful, blissful future?
It is not. The Earth is collapsing in on itself and is engulfed in flames.
Oh, man.
Because of this, Earth's government has built a space arc. Earth's government. In the future, Earth is governed by one government.
One government.
And they have built a space arc, which is going to transfer some people, not everyone's going to get on board, it's a lottery, I assume.
Absolutely not.
Into space where we will live.
Yeah. We're going to travel.
To a new planet.
I don't think we know.
Well, playing games as we go.
There's lots of different people like pitching different things for the space arc. Like
it's chaos.
It is chaos. I'm sure we'll work this out. Yeah, but we've basically, the rotating platform podcast crew have been commissioned to select video games to store in the very small game storage area.
Yeah.
These are precious cultural artifacts. Between us, we've decided that the best way of doing this is to pick a genre every week and then each make a case for one game to go into it, which must then the others have to agree to it, you know, because we don't want to fill the game up, you know, the space arc with a load of trash, so, because, you know, that would just suck.
I can imagine the headlines now.
Because
they chose some dreadful games.
Because, you know, people are already pretty sore that there is a room for video games and not their families.
And also,
they're quite sore about.
We've made it very clear we're not listening to anyone else's opinion. It's just us three.
It's just
the rest of humanity's opinion about all video games counts for nothing in this process.
And also we're ignoring everything that's happened between the year 2014 and the year 3000.
Games stopped.
Because, nothing good was released, right? we've all agreed.
Yeah.
Good games stopped September 2014.
So this week we have convened to discuss the sporting genre, which is a massive genre.
That's right.
It is huge.
It got even bigger between 2014 and 3000, as you know.
With all of those new sports.
All the future sports. They've already been discounted.
Yeah. The future sports. Olympics were amazing.
Yeah. And laser football.
Laser football. Laser baseball. Yeah. Laser hockey.
Yeah.
They're big into lasers in the future.
Monkey tennis.
Laser monkey tennis.
Every podcast.
who is going to make their first case for their sporting game?
Oh, can I go first?
Yeah, absolutely.
This week. So I don't know if this is a sports game. The classic.
Do you not understand what's at stake here?
I think we've all run into the problem of what is a sports game.
The classic space arc mentality. It's a game called SSX Tricky.
Oh,
extreme sports.
Yeah.
Yes.
Kind of.
Yes.
So snow-based sport game.
Yes.
Hmm. Okay.
Is it? Have I fallen at the first hurdle, or do I have to go through the motions?
I don't know.
Watch this space.
I'm thinking wistfully of snow, which has not existed on Earth since the event.
Since the event. Yeah. I'm not sure that a snow-based game is really, you know, like a sort of snowboarding type game is really going to sort of cut the mustard.
So you're
already down on it.
I just mentioned the title of the game. No, well, obviously, if it's not really a sports game, I'll pick something else.
I think it counts.
Yeah. Okay, Mark, let's entertain this ludicrous notion that the snow-based games are sport.
Make a case for one of the last remaining three potential sports games in the universe should be SSX Tricky.
It's not actually a sport. SSX Tricky, then, was the second game in the SSX series. I'm just looking around for support.
Yes.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And so this was before the one big mountain of SSX 3. And yes, the idea is that you are in, doing races against other people. You are doing stunt races against other people. You're going down a mountain really fast on a snowboard. But it's completely a fantastic version of snowboarding. You build up power meters, go really, really high, huge jumps. Music kicks in, famously, when you've got your tricky meter to the top. So it's just a kind of, I don't want to say the phrase aerial ballet, but I'm going to do it anyway, of a game.
It's very stylized, isn't it?
It's super, it's kind of slightly cartoonish, I would say.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
It's not a sort of hyper-realistic, sporting...
No, it does not take itself seriously at all, and it is all the better for it.
Macy Gray was a voice of one of the characters.
Ah, yes, you're right. And,
do you remember Macy Gray?
I do, yeah. I try.
I try to, yeah.
I try. Yeah. We should do that on the Jam of the Band, actually, if it's on there. That would be a classic. So, yeah, and there's a kind of radio DJ dude who, I think, whenever you play a game that has a... So, if you imagine there's two types... You divide games into two types, right? There's the games where there's a woman at the start who says, "Welcome to Sunset City, where you're going to be up against 15 the best drivers on the coast." And then there's games with a male voice who says, "Welcome to the most extreme sports you've ever experienced. You've got to get to the top of it." Kind of two versions of the same game, really. But those... But those are the two kinds of video game. And SSX Tricky is the second kind. Because when you hear that guy...
Because it's got a man.
Yeah.
Is that where this is going?
My point was, it's normally the same guy who does that voice. Because he also does one of the Need for Speeds, I think. Oh, anyway. And he introduces the whole concept that you're in competition. And there's fireworks going off. Crowd noise, I think. It's just really exciting. Pummeling down this mountain. There's all kinds of secret tracks to take. You can kind of cut through tree-lined passageways, find new jumps and mid-air stunts. Really, really satisfying game to play. EA absolutely, totally messed SSX up with the recent reboot.
Oh, the scary, like... Death Mountain.
Yeah, and they introduced...
The mountain will kill you.
And they just introduced this kind of like, go down the path that we have made for you, and if you fall off, you will die and be sent back. Which is the whole point of SSX, is that you, when you don't go the right way, you find it's a different way to go.
Yeah, it's all fun all the time.
Yeah, it's just... So SSX Tricky, I think all the SSXs except the recent EA one have been fantastic. And I would like SSX Tricky to be my genuine sports game.
Yes, because snowboarding is a sport.
It's a
and
sport,
it's completely real.
And you're in a race.
Yeah.
And, it's an extreme sport,
but yeah, it's good. A very extreme example.
I don't feel confident about getting this.
But now, you see, it's all going to be blown out of the water here, or blown off the piece.
Are we going to vote it in or not?
You'd already decided it wasn't going in.
I think I am going to say yes to it, because I think it has, because there's sort of open world, well, not open world, but you know, the idea that you can take a different path down the mountain and stuff, that is more, you know, that's kind of not as falsely restrictive as some sports games.
Oh, totally, yeah. Freedom is what SSX is all about.
And that is... that's what people are going to want to be reminded of in space.
They want to be reminded of the freedom that they've lost.
Yeah. Because there ain't going to be no snowboarding on Mars.
I wouldn't rule it out.
There's no water on Mars.
No.
That's what we haven't broached that subject yet with the people.
No, we should get onto that at some
so,
point.
Anyway, from the absurdity, we got Matthew.
I vote yes.
It's in. So we've decided the snowboarding.
That sounded like it was being ejected.
that was the sound of it being like air sealed in.
Ah, great. Air sealed, but we can access it on the space.
No. No, that's the tragedy of space art.
That's a shame. We just gazed.
So it's kind of being shrink wrapped.
Yeah.
Into place. Okay. You know, into this space compartment
to be played later.
To be so it's kind of being almost like it's been cryogenically frozen for thawing out later in happier times.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you freeze a disc?
Yeah. I hope so. Or this game's collection is going to be pretty embarrassing. We're like, oh no.
It's going to be a pile of dust.
Oh, don't tell us. Yeah. We've got a room of busted game cartridges.
What games could you freeze that would actually still work? I mean, N64 cart, surely.
That's bat and ball.
Cards.
Yeah. So we've taken the controversial.
Yeah, we should have put more thought into this about these conversations about how we're going to.
Well, I like that we're working these kinks out as we go along.
Yeah, that's exactly what the Earth government hope for.
Well, yeah, they appointed us. Just don't tell them.
Yeah, just a kind of ad hoc.
We're thinking about the future.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm done. I'm in. I can relax.
Well, okay, your game is.
Well, your game.
That's for another day.
Oh, that's an awkward moment.
No, that's the final episode where we realise it's just me and hundreds of dreadful games.
Stuck playing the room for 20 years that it will take to travel to our next home. Okay, so he wants to try and top SSX Chicky.
Well, if we're classic deciding that snowboarding is a sport and worthy of inclusion. And we best include 1080 on the N64.
Oh, you're saying the only sports games that will last of all the sports, two of them are going to be freaking snowboarding.
You mean you haven't chosen a snowboarding game, Matthew? Come on.
No, I haven't.
I think you should, for completion's
sake.
See, I really struggled with... I have a list in front of me of about a dozen sports games that I put down from... You know, I mentioned it earlier this podcast, Horace Goes Skiing, timeless classic.
What is it with snow? I'm telling
you. It's snow themed.
Horace Goes Skiing isn't a sports game.
I know this.
Oh, right, okay.
But I started to think about things like... I was really going to put together a case for WWF No Mercy.
Oh, then you would have got a definite no.
I know, that's why I've changed it, because I thought there is no way...
I would have voted yes.
Oh, wow. Really?
It would have gone in. Yeah,
I made a tactical mistake there. Because
I know it's important. I'm not a big wrestling guy myself, but I know that game is important to people who I trust on the subject of wrestling.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And it's also, we're wildly off topic, but I hadn't really played wrestling games before I played No Mercy, and it got me into wrestling games. I just thought they were totally absurd nonsense, and then I suddenly thought, this is the point of
it. If it converts you, it's worth it.
And nothing that I've even looked at afterwards has come anywhere near to that. I'm sure there are great wrestling games out there.
No, people will tell you it's the best, still the best.
So that's the game I haven't picked. The game that I have picked, 1080, for probably all the reasons that you've just rejected, it's got the feel of it. Like, it feels like snow, yeah? That's probably the most satisfying thing. Is, you know, it kind of has the crunch and the squodge of snow and the satisfaction of it. And something to do with the N64's controller really suited this idea of sort of ploughing through a soft substance.
Yeah.
Like it really felt
carving.
Like... Carving, that's the word. Mm. Yeah. And it really... it's a great game.
Mm.
And it does follow a more traditional, like, structure, because, you know, you've got time-based races, or you can do stunt-y-based tricks, you know, see how many tricks you can do in a certain period of time.
Yeah.
Which is pretty much straight-up stuff. But, I mean, as a game very early in the N64's life, it was, a cracking technical achievement.
Mm. It's kind of somewhat forgotten now, 1080, I think. It's
shame
kind of
that.
Cult, more of a cult
game. I think that GameCube one put people off a bit.
What GameCube one?
Avalanche.
Oh, yeah, right. There was Blue Storm and Avalanche, were there? Sort of two updates of the...
It was a dodgy GameCube sequel to 1080 that no one really liked.
Yeah. I've never played those.
Yeah, it's not...
I'm not missing much,
sure.
Okay.
I played Avalanche, actually. I must have done at some point, but... Anyway, digress.
So that definitely isn't going in the space at all.
Snowboarding. I mean, there's not much to say about it, really. It just has the feel about it. And just it's one of those games that, despite being a sport game, which I detest and loathe, I could just keep coming back and playing that almost endlessly. Just the hours that I put into it.
Yeah. Well, for I mean, I'm not so much driven for in our space art deliberations. I'm not so much driven by needing to get the highest quality games in.
It's just a sheer number of snowboarding games, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, just selfishly wanting to preserve all the attention for the game that I have chosen. So I'm going to say no to 1080.
So on a purely selfish basis, despite the fact it's a superior game. Yeah.
I think it is a beautiful game, and I remember at the time it was astonishing just how real it felt. But what are you laughing at?
No, just the idea of like so selfish. Want people to like SSX Tricky more, so I'm going to banish it from space.
That's my primary motivation in this horrific time for mankind.
In a plea of desperation, I've got rapid fire other sporting games that are they sport? Are they not?
Unconventional?
Okay.
But you've made a case for 1080.
I'm not making a case for these. These are the ones that didn't make the cut. Okay, but this is my short list. Know, World Cup on the ZX Spectrum.
That was okay.
You don't like?
No, I played that game a lot as a child.
Yeah.
Have I ever told you about me and my sister playing hide and seek in World Cup?
World Cup.
Yeah. So you can.
It's a football pitch.
Yeah, right. But if you were playing two players, you could go off behind the goalie, behind the goal, and disappear off the screen. So one of me and my sister would go off the screen, and you could still move up and down, and then we'd pop out, and it would be like hide and seek.
Oh, I see.
I was like seven.
It's a meta game within World Cup. That's brilliant.
So for that, for those beautiful memories that you, from 1,100 years ago, why are we still alive?
Huh?
Why are we still?
We'll get onto that in a later week.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was so simple. There was no, you know, you moved block by block in World Cup, because it was literally just your player was in one space and everybody ran the same speed and you could move up or down or diagonally, but that meant it was a strategic thing rather than a kind of graph, you know, the skill of your manipulation.
This cannot go in the space.
It's not going in. I'm rejecting it. On
fact, I'm taking your copy
it's basically
now.
Done.
I'm throwing it out the window into the lava.
No emotion. No.
That's cold.
Yeah, that is cold. I just threw it into lava.
No, fair enough. I've rejected
everyone
it.
Everyone got excited because they thought I was going to throw food out the window. They touched it, got me one cup, which I'm throwing into the lava. And one's like, oh, wait. Oh, bread.
Space along government. With all your childhood memories. Sad.
What else did you have on your list?
Rocky on the Sega Master System.
Rocky.
Yeah, movie tie-in game. Really quite satisfying.
I liked Rocky Boxing on the GameCube.
Imagine that, but
of these games.
On the Master System. And
it was a bit like Ready to Rumble. It may have even been reskinned version of Ready to Rumble.
Maybe they're related.
Oh, it wasn't quite... Rocky on the Sega Master System was side-on. Mm. And again, it had that feel when you punch Drago and his head goes back. It's again with the Dolph Lundgren. And you punch him and his head goes back. It's something very, very satisfying about it. Again, it's got that sort of feel of crunch about it.
Not a
nasty
race. Hasn't reached the tipping point.
Doesn't really scream space up.
Unlike the people outside.
Space up! Please!
This is your favourite bit about this section, isn't it? You love to see humanity burn. I'm with two very dark people here, listeners. I'm slightly afraid for my life. All those poor burning people are offended by that.
They can't hear us. It's soundproof.
Yes, we've made sure of it.
The window that we watch them through is soundproof.
Yeah,
okay, that's good. Are they like thrusting copies of games towards the glass? That's the incredible. That's what
no,
I'm
they're
doing
like,
now.
No, like kids and
like,
stuff.
Oh, I like
sensible
that
soccer.
Yeah, I like the idea. There are crowds of people all, that we're.
Don't
all...
they all think? But don't they think they can get a ticket on? That's why it's soundproof. We don't want them to know we're discussing something as trivial as what games are going to be saved. Because they think we're doing like which neighbourhood is going to be saved. So they're all putting up pictures of their families.
Which fantastic scientist or artist, which work is going to, which statesperson, politician.
Yeah. No, we are going on.
Which snowboarding game from the early 2000s is going to go in?
I think I just lit read that guy mouthing horoscope skiing. Surely not. We're only halfway through your list.
Oh, no. I don't think we can top that. Oh, no. We can't top it. I'm dropping that. We've got to move on. We've got to move on.
I must admit, I think it's a little ludicrous having two snowboarding games. So I'm sorry, Alan.
So you're going to make it a third?
I'm going to veto with Mark.
Just because he got there first. It's a better game. It's more true to...
I think SS Tricky has got a spirit of sort of fun that future humanity wants.
But my take on this was that sport is not about fun.
Well, everything's going to be about fun in the future. Because we're literally going to be living in like industrial bunks in the hull of
the
space.
The way you said that was the most sinister thing I've heard in a while. In the future, everything's going to be about fun.
Well, it'll have to be. That's why we're here. Yeah. I just think people will be like, oh, no, we're mutiny if we bring two snowboarding games.
To do
so, no.
We'll go somewhere.
No, afraid not.
Oh, man.
But don't let that taint your vote for my choice.
Yeah.
Which is... I can't think of another snowboard
kids.
No, which is Tony Hawk Pro Skater 4.
Right. Ooh, 4, okay.
Yeah. I say 4 because that's the Tony Hawk game I've played.
Uh-huh.
I kind of think...
It's not the classic choice.
Well, the thing is, though, although it's a theory I can't prove because I've only played one, I think you've sort of fallen in love with the Tony Hawk game that you play, like that you learn to play Tony Hawk with, because yeah. that because it has such a sort of
yeah.
weird idiosyncratic kind of control
yeah.
scheme,
yeah.
and
yeah.
it genuinely it's one of the few games that I felt I learnt to play over many many hours,
uh-huh.
and
yeah.
kind of felt myself getting better at it, and now it's like I can play skating games because of that, because I've got the basics down, and you know
yeah.
you learn what all the mad lingo's about and stuff. So yeah, there might be a better Tony Hawk game out there. Like 3 is the one a lot of people reach for.
Mm-hmm.
I liked 4. It was a little bit open worldy, but not too open worldy. You know, you had the kind of each area you had amount of time, and you could go and get little missions within it, and you were kind of against the clock to cram in as many of those missions as possible.
Mm-hmm.
It was before, because I think after that is when it went into like the underground, all that thug open, you know, we
yeah.
carry the board around, which is just like nonsense.
It's not the point of. Yeah.
It's when it became kind of gimmicky, but this, I loved it. I think the Tony Hawk manual, not the instruction manual, the quick up down, and then you're balancing. Balance meter is one of gaming's like most beautiful risk reward things when you're,
yeah.
you know, when you're hammering the buttons to do other like modifying tricks, and you see the combo modifier going, and you're like, oh, and it's becoming more and more unwieldy to steer about, and
yeah.
I just think that's a level of stress that humanity needs to preserve.
It's going to do as well when we're confined in the capsule that takes us to our
new life. Set in real world locations.
Yeah,
yeah.
It will serve as like a reminder of what London was like, what
of
like
urban grime,
of what Los Angeles was like, what a generic school was like. I just think the you know, it'll be like, this is where kids used to skate in London, around
yeah.
the policeman.
A distant time remembered. Yeah,
it'll be like a holo, you know, it's almost like a VR thing. It's like a memory.
It's almost like VR. So it's kind of got a nostalgic value to it.
Nostalgic, but like you have to skateboard at the same time while you're being nostalgic. So it's like it's like reliving your happy memories in London, but you've got to be doing gnarly tricks.
You've got to be gnarly
while you're doing it.
Yeah.
So like, so grandma can be like, that's where I met your dad.
So not a million miles away from snowboarding games, actually.
I think it's silly that we've all proposed boards.
Snowboarding on wheels.
Yeah. That's weird, because when I picked SSX, I thought, oh, I'm going to be the person who picks the non-pure sports game.
I'm not a sport guy, so...
I'm not sure...
I was going to go for Gran Turismo.
Well, that's the kind of...
I'd say driving is a slightly different category.
Yeah. But then it's a driving game, right? And you know, week 57 we're doing driving games.
Yeah,
right.
You're not a big sports person, really, are you? No. I'm not. So there's a flaw in this.
I feel like we've not done it justice because, for example, the passion that I know like colleagues have for either what used to be PES, it sort of shifts more towards FIFA now.
Maybe
it'll shift back one day.
Yeah, I think it's 2034.
2034, that PES finally reclaims the crown. Of course, who could forget a great year? PES 34.
There's also stuff like Blood Bowl. I've never played Blood Bowl, but by hearing people talk about it, I'd love to play that.
What have you got into?
Oh, it's a fantasy sport thing. Like American Warhammer. Football.
Retro game.
No, it's not that old, no.
Yeah, but it's not like every year it's like PES versus FIFA versus Blood Bowl. Everyone's like, is this going to be the year Blood Bowl comes out on top? You're like, no.
Never.
No, it's not, because it's a fantasy football game starring goblins. So that's my case for Pro Skater 4.
Press Skater 4,
Don't be like bitter about
I don't make decisions based on bitterness,
Green. Someone's got to.
Selfishness, Mark Green?
Well, it takes all sorts in the space arc. You know,
selfish,
the
bitter.
A broad spectrum of human emotion and motivation. So, yeah, makes things more interesting.
Yeah. I'm thinking about the sportiness of it and sport, where it represents competition and... You know, the gnarliness. It just doesn't feel like pure kind of sportiness, which is harsh. But if we're going to represent the best and brightest of sports games, it's a great game, but I don't think it's a great sports game. Sorry, Matthew.
Okay, so I just need one vote, one other vote.
Well, I'm voting no, because it's the wrong one. You picked the wrong Tony Hawk's game. I think...
So the only sports game we're preserving...
is SSX Tricky. Brilliant. I think we've perfectly represented the sports genre as per our remit for the Space Art Preservation Game Preservation Committee, or wherever we are. We represent sports through the single choice of
SSX Tricky.
There's something wrong with the process here, I think.
I don't know. Maybe football games is a separate.
I blame the committee.
I like maybe what would be good now is if there's a giant dot matrix board outside and it now flashes up our final choice.
Everyone's like, what is it?
It's tricky.
And nothing else. You had three spaces. Are you saying the two spaces are going to be empty?
Yeah.
Mind you, I must say, my made-up game from the last podcast hasn't come out yet. Hensley Pitonk. That's got to be up there.
That's true. Can we fill up the other two spaces with Scotch eggs or something similar? Do we get to choose what?
Green, I hate to break it to you, but Scotch eggs ran out 600 years ago.
We need to be
bit, the egg or the
both.
Pork and breadcrumbs? Oh, all the
breadcrumbs.
So the findings of the committee are SSX Tricky and Scotch eggs.
And it's flashing up on the board now. The crowd are
not pleased. They think they're getting Scotch eggs. They're like, yes! I remember those.
Now we have his picnic eggs.
Well, another historic...
and hysterical.
...week for the Space Arc.
For the august body that is the...
we've done our duty... to the utmost of our ability again.
With trademark professionalism and diplomacy.
Yeah. And
Long live Space Arc!
you're really buying into it.
That's how I think how we should end the section.
Okay, yeah. That might be a bit creepy. I don't buy into the Space Arc quite as much as that.
Well, that's lucky. Space Arc doesn't buy into the concept of Mark Green either.
Spoiler alert for the last episode.
I don't like it. I don't like this. Right, let's travel back to the present. travel back to the... Did I say travel back?
Yeah.
Great. Let's travel back to the present. And off the arc, onto a platform, and then off a platform and onto another platform.
Yeah. And then this.
And now the rotating platform has come to a stop, allowing us to step off and return to our lives. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rotating Platform. If you would like to get in contact with us, you can email us at therotatingplatform@therotatingplatform.com. You can visit our site at therotatingplatform.com. And you can find us on Twitter at, and this is confusing, the Rotating Podcast.
Yeah, not the. So it's
not at those at imposters that we've got. Yeah. Not
those imposters. Those. Yeah. We're the ones that are verified.
Oh, no, we're not. Not yet. At Rotating Podcast. Yeah.
And those are the ways you can communicate with us.
Yeah, please do.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode and you will join us for another episode in the future. So it's
not in the year 3000.
Not in the year 3000.
No. Well, although I guess we will be doing a podcast that week.
That's true. We will be. Yeah. And things will really be kicking off then, I can tell you.
So
until then,
sweet dreams. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Good night.